Okay, and we're back. And this is, we were just looking through context on that front and read through that box. And we're just going to keep rolling here. And we're going to go through these components and temporal characteristics. The tyranny virus's attack is an attack on multiple fronts, where the least consequential aspects are deeply debated and the most consequential are ignored completely. You can see this especially in the astounding psychological damage that mask wearing does to the population, where that was imposed upon us very early on, and all the debate was about very small issues. It's what I believe Thomas Hobbes mentioned in his Leviathan, that such a thing is pusillanimous. What's the word, which seems quite a word all the same, but that it's a derogatory term that refers to focusing on things that don't matter and ignoring that does. And so when we focus on when at the time when this first came on, we focused on things like, oh, where did this come from? What was it, the Chinese that did it? Did it come from this wet market? Or, various minor things, rather than looking at the large-scale psychological damage that comes with stopping people from seeing each other's face and us speaking freely. That's a much larger issue. That's just one example there. So, tyranny virus attack on multiple fronts. Least consequential aspects are deeply debated. Most consequential ignored completely. Now, this is a tendency, again, when it comes to when you're trying to find the truth of any sort of issue. It refers, again, to that Hegelian dialectic where problem, reaction, solution, where the solution is the intention and the problem is the excuse. And when the solution isn't, it goes back to what President Trump said. The solution can't be worse than the problem. And this is something that in media analysis, that's something that you can notice in order to help find the real truth that's going on, is when there are minor issues that are debated greatly, while the larger issues are ignored, then you can see that there's something sketchy going on there. And this is as well something that's been going on in political discourse for a very long time. The greater issues are ignored while the minor issues are the ones that are hotly debated. I think there might be a window of sorts that refers to as well. But anyway, socialism, communism, monopolism, in practice are static states, economically and culturally. The static effects, therefore, are the real intent behind this whole panic. And this refers to the fact that, again, that says it right there, they're static states, so they're continuous. So it's the thing that is intended to be permanent that is the intention here, not something that's temporary. You know, temporary stuff is you know, it comes and goes, and that is less an issue. But for us to really focus on and see what the real intent behind things like this tyranny virus is to focus on what becomes permanent. And what becomes permanent as well is also dependent upon the groupthink and psychological aspects of our society, the social science, the social psychology, that once you get something going in enough, a certain percentage of the population, then lots of times they don't quit. There's a social momentum that that pushes it forward. And you can see this again with the masks. So bringing that on and then getting people used to it, and such that they become it becomes a self-policing thing that the population does to itself, that's a sense of, that is a way of making something permanent as well. So the components are biological. Possibly engineered virus, strange symptoms, not that deadly. Could be more innocuous than that, and is mostly perpetuated by panic, given justification by doctored numbers. So the perpetuation by panic comes as a result of not only the media panic that was put upon people over and over, endlessly, but still going on to a certain extent. Not just the aspects of that panic, like, for instance, someone scared so they stay home, or someone scared so they put a mask on their kids, they put two masks on their kids, or something like that, or that sort of thing. But also, perpetuation of that panic can be brought on by the placebo effect, the power of suggestion itself, helping to basically have the cause of someone getting sick. And we know that that's an effect and that that happens. So the perpetuation of that panic is not only media induced, but also induced through the placebo effect itself. Especially when you have a virus or disease here that is, in many cases, and they use that term asymptomatic disease, which is itself a meaningless phrase, completely meaningless. It means nothing at all. If you're asymptomatic, then you don't have a disease. You simply don't, period. to make people think that they have a disease even though they don't have symptoms is, it's the height of cult-like, bizarro world, clown world, intent to completely destroy people's logical systems and get rid of the meaning of words entirely, which we are witnessing we're witnessing the attempt to do so still. So also justification by doctored numbers. This is the PCR test, and there's lots of people who talked about this. It's clear that the tests themselves, sometimes they test positive, sometimes they don't. Anybody can test positive, or anything can test positive, if you run the cycles up high enough. It's bizarre. These sometimes they're just made up entirely. When you look at the actual FDA documents that they came, I read the things, I don't know when exactly they came out for the public, but I read a big document concerning the PCR tests some months back, back in like October or something like that. And it says very explicitly in there that the test can't tell the difference between influenza, common cold, and this new coronavirus. So, it can't even tell the difference between those. And so, so much of these numbers, when it comes to cases, are doctored to begin with and artificially inflated. And so, there you go. That component is biological. And the temporal characteristic behind this is it's a one-time shot. Unless we do not learn from this and allow more. Trust your senses. Now, the reason this is a one-time shot is that the powers that be, their intention to make people panic over nothing, or make people panic over very little, so to speak, it's like a boy who cried wolf type of thing. Like, we're not going to do that again because that's their one shot. They blow their load, their credibility, whatever is left of it, it's nothing. I mean, it completely destroyed when it comes to the people who were pushing this sort of thing endlessly. It's why it really was, it's a one-time shot on there, because they don't have any more, capital to expend. Nobody's listening to them anymore. The same people who, the people who were lying about this are the same ones who lied about 9/11, who lied about the Iraq War, lied about the Afghanistan War, lied about the crash in 2008, lied about everything over and over and over again. They've been gaslighting the population for ages, but you really only get one shot here to sufficiently convince enough of the population that follow through with such lies that are clearly not verifiable in the real world. Our senses tell us quite the opposite of everything that's been claimed through this virus panic. You literally walk down to the hospital and they're saying, oh, they're overcrowded and everyone's dying and all this. And you go to the hospital and they're empty. Like, people saying that there's this giant pandemic and there's this epidemic going on and you walk down to the park and, no one's walking around coughing and sneezing. No one's dropping in the street dead. And so it is... Clearly, you only get a one-time shot on that to get people to believe that and get rid of those of us who can clearly use our, eyes and ears and can make sense of the world. So there you go. One-time shot. Cry wolf thing. They cried wolf once. People aren't going to do it again. So next component, psychological. This trains the population in the desired fear response, obedience, compliance. Confusion attacks logic centers of the brain. Low consensus on rationale contrasts with high consensus to follow orders. So, this is a training mechanism, basically, to get people to comply and to obey whatever it is that the, so-called authorities say. And the less... consensus that there is on a particular thing contrasts with that higher consensus to follow orders. Not higher consensus, but higher demand to follow the orders. So in the case of masks, not only do you have a visual reminder of that sort of thing, you have the groupthink that reinforces it, and you have low consensus, just no scientific consensus at all that they do anything against airborne viruses. None of the studies show that they're beneficial at all. I think there might be a doctored study in the last couple of years that did, but the vast majority of them show that they don't do anything. Even if they did do anything, And what studies show that there's, like a 10% reduction in your likelihood of contracting a disease, that itself, again, completely ignores that's in the event that everyone wears one. And it completely ignores the psychological damage that occurs as a result of the things. And the overloading of CO2, reduction of oxygen, et cetera, et cetera. I'll get into that a little bit later in the detail on masks. Emotional. Component, emotional. Fear, panic, mistrust to justify lockdown. Malicious actors use emotional triggers, algorithmical abuse of social media on an individual level, et cetera. So the emotional triggers that social media has learned to abuse on an individual level were kicked up to the highest level and brought into full operation here on this front. This is all part of the coercion attack to get people to follow these nonsensical and irrational orders. And so emotional appeals to emotion have been one of the number one rationales given by the liars on TV and whatnot. They're really talking about, oh, you don't want to hurt grandma, and don't you want to help society, and you're just being selfish, and you know, do you really want to get sick, and that sort of thing. These are emotional triggers in order to convince you through an irrational response, using emotion as the persuasion. And we know that that's a classic tactic used in all sorts of sales and marketing and everything else. So it's important to be able to recognize that. Emotional is... and the temporal characteristic of the psychological aspect is static. So when you train the population in a fear response, obedience, compliance, all that sort of thing, what you're trying to do is create a static characteristic amongst the population that doesn't change. So the intent to cause people to follow these irrational orders is not something that they only want people to follow irrational orders for a little while and then go back to actually, you know, looking at the world logically and, you know, with clear eyes and with clear senses. No, they want people to follow irrational orders without any real or very little justification forever. So that's a static intent. And it's like a 2 + 2 = 5 type conditioning. And this doesn't disappear with immunity. So you get your shot, you put on your mask, all that sort of thing. Even if by the end of it you have a lower risk of getting this disease, nonetheless, you've been abused and tormented for years now, and that is the that's the static thing, is for you to irrationally follow along with whatever the order is, such that they give you another shot the year afterward, another shot after that, another shot after that. So that's a static characteristic, the psychological. And emotional, the temporal characteristic is cyclical, because collective emotions have been played like a fiddle and areas of resistance may be targeted. As that's the emotional triggers are, it being cyclical, the utility behind that is the reward for compliance. So what we've witnessed on a media level was intense emotional attacks, intense psychological attacks to scare people and make them panic and be afraid. And then when at a certain point, then the media and the attacks would ease up, such that people would have a, you know, a sigh of relief for a little while, or until the new variant comes out, you know, and so then they do the same trigger over and over again and create a cycle out of this, such that it's just a one giant emotional roller coaster that the people are intended to stay on. And so again, something to be aware of and to resist and to, you know, correspondingly ignore. Component educational. Clear lies and deceit destroy logical part of mind when followed. This is intentional. Common core, anti-mathematics, critical race theory, etc. are clear attacks on the minds of the population, particularly kids. And temporal characteristic of that is static. That's the intent. A classic tactic, change the standards forever and all time because of a small temporary thing. So the educational system, that's the intent, is to create a static system where they create a more tight-knit system of abuse upon our kids, particularly, and lie to them repeatedly to destroy the logical part of our brains, such that they'll simply fall in line and do whatever it is that whatever deceitful liar at the top wants to do. So, again, for a temporary thing, the imposition is a permanent solution to, you know, fix this temporary thing. And you can see that education has simply just gotten worse and worse and worse over the years, over the decades, certainly as long as I've been alive. And this really kicked it to the next level of, okay, this is really not about, you know, education system's really not about teaching, for the most part, teaching the important subjects just enough so that you can be easily lied to, and of course, teaching compliance and conformity and coordinating and getting up when the bell rings and sitting down when it does and all that sort of thing, that conditioning that comes with it. So, next component is social. Forced isolation amounts to no less than mass torture, depending on disposition and prior relationships. Diverts sociality to electronic devices and controlled, specially curated platforms. And this is static. Unless the people force it, the release of mandates is like a reward for compliance, like a treat as one trains a dog. So you can see this in what they did in a lot of other countries, where they're like, okay, we have a lockdown, and then they let people out for a little while, and then they have another lockdown, and they let people out for a little while, and then they have another lockdown, and they let people out for a little while. That forced isolation, the social isolation that comes to that sort of thing is you know, the carrot on the stick. It's the thing that that just mentioned, kind of like the emotional cycles, the emotional roller coasters they put people through, is a similar thing. It creates that reward system, and also it indemnifies that system. And this is the static part of it. It creates that system as something to be expected. To be like, oh, well, this is perfectly fine. Oh, the, you know, Fauci say that we need to stay inside for 2 weeks again, and then after that, then we can go out and we can play and have fun and that sort of thing. Which, again, I mean, it's just, the intent to do that is a static thing, such that, again, you follow these irrational orders against your own better interest, and you, logic, center of your mind is destroyed. Getting to go out and hang out with friends is some sort of reward for your compliance, as opposed to, you know, your natural right as a human being to do that if you wish. So, next component is cultural. A full-throated assault on anything and everything that people enjoy in groups. Holidays, art, performance, entertainment, crafts, sports, and more. And this is static, again. Again, unless the people force it, the release of mandates is a reward for compliance. Yep, so nothing in the amongst this tyranny virus mandates and all that is supposed to be helpful to you at all. All the things that we've always enjoyed, the intent was to destroy all of them and inflict as much misery as possible, such that we would, collapse into a crying ball and be unable and unwilling to even go out into the rest of the world unless the authorities gave us the go-ahead. I've watched this, the destruction of the entertainment districts. I can't imagine what's happened to all my musician friends through all this. And this is still an attack that's ongoing. So whatever it is that people enjoy in groups, you look at 1984 as again, that's a bit of the instruction manual here. How do you get to a 1984 authoritative, tyrannical world where people will just, you know, drop down and do whatever it is the authorities say, is because they allowed them to take away all the good things in their life. And it's important that we resist that, of course, and that we, you know, continue to do the things that we really want to do and enjoy, because otherwise they will be taken away. They'll try to take them away. And the cultural aspect of things is a big part of that. The attack on sports, on entertainment, on performance, on holidays, on art, on crafts, all of that. All these things that for a lot of people would be like, oh, it's great to go out on a Saturday afternoon and head to the craft market or go to the farmer's market, that sort of thing. Again, all these were under attack greatly. Hopefully those are starting back up, and I would like to encourage everyone as well to start back up your craft markets, start up your farmer's markets, get out there and do your performances, set up shows, like play music, do a public performance art, whatever it is, go out and do it, and don't be afraid to do it either. And if some authority says that, oh, you can't do that because of virus, you know that they are they've swallowed the Kool-Aid, so to speak, and they're not to be listened to. Really, it just comes down to that. If they say that, oh, you can't do that because of virus, well, they're, ignore that person. Ignore them. Pass on an Exorcism of Tyranny pamphlet to them, and maybe they'll see the error of their ways. And again, that's a static change. It's meant to be a permanent change to a what is ostensibly a temporary issue. So again, don't let those permanent changes happen. Component, political, creates a crisis of leadership among those pushing this forward. And there are four basic types: the dupe, the compromised, the criminal, and the true believer. And this is static. Those four basic types will be the defining qualities of our, quote, leaders if the tyranny virus were to be perpetuated. When you have this hierarchy of abuse, the intent behind it, part of it, again, there's many intents here, but part of the great intent behind it is to turn our leadership into not much more than, bubbling children who don't know any better, or lackeys in a organized mafia ring who just do whatever the Godfather says. It creates a dupe, creates compromised individuals, creates criminals, and it creates true believers amongst them all. And that, as we want to try to avoid having those sorts of people in charge or in power. What we need are real leaders who can show us how to stand up for ourselves and to resist these authoritative attacks on our way of life. And so there's a lot of them out there too, and more of them are stepping up every day, and it's great to see that. I'd like to encourage further that we do that. So, and also those attacks, these are points of attack. The freedoms that are under attack, that's the next box here. And the points of attack, freedoms. A speech, and this is a clear attack, chills free speech with censorship, literally, masks are muzzles, overt and implied. That says it right there. It is an attack. And again, so much of the time people say that our freedoms are under threat, or we're in danger, or that sort of thing. Our freedoms are in danger. No, they're under attack. That's what's happening now, still. under attack, even though there's plenty of pushback on this, and we've really got the, and eventually we're going to win this war, of course, but it's important that we recognize that, that they are under attack. There's the people who are pushing this sort of thing, they have no intention of this being temporary at all. This has nothing to do with helping your health at all. This has nothing to do with benefiting the working class or any sort of communistic or socialistic economic ideology. This is an intent to enslave the human race as many people as possible in as complete a way as can be done. And anyway, so so freedoms. Amongst those ways of attacking, we have these ones in particular. Speech, again, the muzzles and the censorship and all of that. This clearly is against everything that America stands for. Religion, again, a clear attack. Organized religion requires worship in person, gives free license for tyrants to abuse whoever they want, and act on personal grudges. So when you have arbitrary shutdowns, you also have those in power who are directing this sort of thing can simply point these shutdowns and attack arbitrary whoever it is that they have personal grudge with as well. I think we saw that in California a fair amount, where there were some churches and some businesses that were very specifically being targeted, and others that were completely left alone to do whatever they wished. And similar thing in New York and in New York City. They're targeting some businesses and they're letting others, open up and do what they want. When you have dictates and mandates that are just willy-nilly put out there by whoever it is that has a large stage and a megaphone, that's what you're going to end up with, is that some people who are on the side of the gangsters will be allowed to stay open, or they won't be targeted, but others will be. If you don't play ball, if you're not friends with them, or you don't show enough fealty, or you don't pay their protection money, or that sort of thing. And so the religious organizations, churches, all that be attacked as well. And also religion, since it is organized religion is something that feeds the body and soul, this is an attack, this tyranny virus being an attack on the human spirit, they have to go after religion. Whatever the religion is, it doesn't really matter what it is, unless it's some sort of, you could look at this thing itself as being its own sort of new religion, which kind of is for a lot of folks. But all the traditional religions, since they don't, none of them really tell the people to follow along with whatever issues or dictates. If they don't, that organized religion is to be attacked by this. And I think a lot of people are getting this now. Hopefully more and more of the pastors and priests and all that really understand this. But a fair amount of them were already compromised, and they're already a part of the whole, part of the whole club that's been putting this on. And so, unfortunately, a lot of them just have to be, ignored. And we need to take back our churches. We really do, as people. We need to take back our places of worship, because so many of them were sold out and, passed along to really criminal scum. And and if you're not standing up, if you're part of a church that the pastor isn't standing up to this, then this is where the rubber meets the road. When it comes to politicians, when it comes to thought leaders, religious leaders, if you weren't standing up for this, then what are you doing? The whole point of you being in a position of leadership is that you during these times is when you'd stand up and say, no, I'm not going to close my church for this. No, we're not going to do this. We're not going to force experimental medicines upon people. Not upon this flock, in any case. And for those of them that really just wimped out on this, I mean, sorry, folks, but y'all failed the test. If you were in the position of authority in the religious world, and you just laid down and let this happen, like, sorry. You don't deserve to have anybody, following you anymore at all, in any manner. Because this is where the rubber meets the road. And if you're in a position of authority and you didn't stand up against this, at least to some point, or if you didn't, investigate it to a certain extent and utilize your position to stand up against it, then again, you're either a dupe, you're compromised, you're criminal, or you're some sort of true believer in this institutionalized abuse. And if that's the case, then you don't deserve to have anybody following you anymore. Okay, freedoms. The press, clear attack. Consistency in lying reinforces groupthink for the press. Journalistic standards attacked. Overt and self-imposed censorship. Yep, so all of that, I think it's pretty clear for those who have been closely examining the media through all this, is that they've basically just prostituted themselves to whoever had the most money, which turns out was the pharmaceutical industry and big tech, who had as well other ulterior motives, which I'll get to a little bit later. But the press really dropped the ball here. Now, the what you call the corporate media for decades has been clearly not on the side of people, the average American in general. But this really seals the deal on that front. Fortunately, there are a lot of people out there, independent reporters that are getting more organized, and journalists out there who are really standing up and, you know, are taking this opportunity to expose the abuses of the system as we had it, and as well to talk about what's really going on while this this is being used as a giant distraction as well, and of course as a method to strip us of our rights. Now, for all of them that are standing up and doing that, it's amazing, and y'all have really helped hold up the sky, so to speak. And hope you keep up the good work. Freedom of assembly. It encourages and rewards fear of others. Little face-to-face communication, social isolation, intends reality to be subservient to digital communication and thusly controlled. Again, clear attack on the freedom of assembly. That garbage where they're like, you can't have any more than 6 people or something meeting together and all that. I mean, it is so clear and so obvious that this was crafted to attack these very communicative abilities. That if you can't see that, then I don't know what to tell you. You gotta wake up. You gotta wake up. This was the intent was to attack all of this. Our ability to communicate, meet with each other, get together, all that sort of thing. Fortunately, again, there's so much pushback against this, and it's getting really, really more and more difficult for people in positions of leadership or in positions of media to play dumb and just pretend, oh yeah, well, you can only, you know, you can only do this because of the virus. It's so absurd. It's only lasts so long before it's so clearly garbage. Anyway, points of attack: small business. Entrepreneurship is the cornerstone of a healthy economy and personal liberty. Panic and fear hurt small business worst. Monopolies benefit from the panic, continuing trajectory of the last few decades. Carte blanche for government corporate collusion. Virus provides easy playing it stupid excuse for criminals and government. Yep, there you go. That's playing it stupid excuse. And the monopolies, of course, since they're so important that your Walmart, your Amazon, and all the usual suspects, since they're so important in making sure that everyone gets their essential goods, they weren't actually shut down at all, only as the small businesses. And this is clearly the economic aspect of this. The attack on small business has been absolutely ruthless. And the sons of bitches who pulled that off, we need to make sure not to forget this. Do not forget this, my friends. Do not forget this. And whatever money you got, get to a lawyer and sue the hell out of anyone and everyone who told you that you couldn't open your business and that caused such a panic in the population that it was impossible to continue to operate. Like, again, all of this is absolute garbage, totally illegal. All of those mandates and impositions, completely illegal. And you and everyone else who had a small business that was wrecked by this are entitled to compensation by those very corrupt actors that helped put this on. So, again, clear attack on that. Independent media. Wide swaths of independent media have been attacked for basic questions of authorities. Legacy stations, traditionally relied upon, add extra force. Again, benefits monopolies only. Except where and when print revives. That is an attack on the independent media. I think it's pretty clear what's been going on that front. At the same time, independent media has stepped it up in ways that I don't think the powers that be ever thought could happen. I mean, they have been just absolutely ruthlessly taken down every aspect of this thing, and it's been pretty glorious to watch the fall of the mighty ones, so to speak, and it's great. So again, much props to the independent media and journalists and reporters out there who've been going after those who've been perpetuating these lies, because it's been awesome. Y'all have been kicking a lot of ass, and keep up the good work. Again, general culture is particularly damaging to large cities where groupthink is very powerful, often simply as a result of population density. Smaller cultures attacked as well, as with business, if police choose to enforce unjust mandates. So general culture just got attacked and wrecked by this whole thing. When you go after gatherings of people and say that you can't gather, and you know, for the better part of 2 years, and you're really attacking culture, you're attacking art, music, sports, all of that, and it's a unfortunately, in the cities as well, you have that. You have more the that sense of groupthink pressure that keeps people, you know, following the herd, so to speak. Now, we're not all herd animals, but there is that social aspect to us that is undeniable, and there's a part of that. It reminds me of that sense that. If you really want to be free, then this is the line that I've heard before. If you really want to be free, then you need to not care what people think. Now, this is accurate. At the same time, it's like if you want to, we'll go into that. We'll go into that at a later date. But anyway, yeah, so in the cities, groupthink's a little bit stronger than otherwise. This is a general cultural observation that I've noticed, and I think it's probably pretty clear just from the sheer numbers aspect of it in comparison to smaller communities. But that general culture, like, I mean, the stopping of theater productions and plays, that alone, I can't imagine what it's done in New York, but I can see it here in Kansas City, that the traditional swath of people who would frequent theater productions, whether small scale, large scale, that sort of thing, and going down to like the symphony, that sort of deal, are the very same folks who listen to all of this, who listen to all this virus panic nonsense, and really took it to be what it was extensively claimed to be. And so they've gotten hosed worse than anyone, as bad as anyone on this front, because the very things that they loved so much to enjoy, the symphony and the theater and all that sort of thing, they were lied to such an extent that that I don't know if there a lot of these places are going to be able to get their theater operations back up and running at all. And same with symphonies. It's a shame that they got hosed and followed along with that. But that's the intention. Again, another intention behind this tyranny virus is to crush all those things that you always enjoyed, that all of us enjoyed. The general culture, art and performance and entertainment. So, and points of attack, communication. Forces reliance upon digital communication devices. This is a very important point here, folks. Like, this wouldn't even necessarily have gone on as far as it did and as long as it has if we didn't have the internet and phones and social media and all that sort of thing to provide that social connection that was all stripped away from us. People would have just got up and said, "Oh, nuts to this. I'm going to go down and meet with somebody. It's just ridiculous being totally isolated in your room." Excuse me. Or in your house. Under lockdown orders, so to speak. Which are really, again, people just saying shit with a loud microphone. megaphone. But the forced reliance upon these digital communication devices is... which are primary means of censorship and miscommunication, kind of are, builds upon 10 years at least before 2020 came. Younger generations have been targeted the most, computers and tablets for every grade school kid. So part of this part of it that is absolutely integral to the takeover is the digital communication, such that people would... our communication would be relegated through digital means, as opposed to us getting together and gathering as a group and then talking about what's important. Or us, in my case, utilizing paper and pamphlets in order to spread around an idea, rather than speaking through social media or attempting to use email or phone calls and that sort of thing. Because I've noticed, at least for me personally, that there's some sort of screening process that goes on for my email and for calls and that sort of thing, that I can't necessarily prove this. I mean, so much of everything that's being done to us is under the auspices of plausible deniability, and if there's a way that the centralized communication sources can find a way to impose restrictions upon our communication, but at the same time do so while plausibly denying it, they will do that. The fact that I've noticed this for me, and this is a hypothesis in many ways, that has very much a whole lot of evidence that such has been going on. I could see the same thing being done to many other people, and a lot of them not noticing at all that anything had even changed. That whereas when 5 years ago, you would receive a call or an email from whoever called you, whoever sent you an email, to where it is 5 years from there, and you're only getting calls from approved sources, and you're only getting emails from approved sources through various filtering and screening process, which could be a bubble that you've been put into, or could be a bubble that someone else is put into, that makes sure that they don't send out to others, or it's a little bit of both, probably a little bit of both. So something to keep in mind. And at that, the centralized nature of these communication devices allows for that as a tactic or strategy that they would utilize to prevent us from communicating with each other, which is clearly what an intent here, one of the great intents behind this virus panic has been, is to wreck and ruin our ability to communicate with each other. Okay, so then we have detail on masks. This is just a quick and short catalog of negative aspects. I've gone through this a lot before, and there's plenty of other places that folks have gone on about this. I noticed that the High Wire, especially with Del Bigtree, has been huge and instrumental on this front, amongst many others. But short catalog. Number one, restricts breathing of oxygen from 21% atmospheric content to 17 or 18%, depending on the material and the fit. That's accurate from folks using oxygen monitors and putting them underneath the mask and breathing normally. That's what happens. And what you have there is a 15% reduction in the amount of oxygen that you generally get. This is especially not helpful for kids who need extra oxygen for their brains as they're growing in their bodies to operate normally. And so it's kind of like being in a everyone's raised up. You raise yourself up a little bit atmospherically. But you don't have the benefits that come along with it. Two, overload CO2 from 0.4% atmospheric content to 4.0%, 10 times the recommended amount. Again, depending on material and fit. And that is also very much not good, not helpful to be breathing that much CO2. Remember that CO2 is a waste product from our bodies. It's what we expel. We're not supposed to be breathing it back in. It's supposed to leave our bodies and then we're supposed to breathe back in the oxygen. We're not supposed to be rebreathing it, just like any other waste product that comes out of our bodies. We're not supposed to be putting it back into us. clearly, okay. Three, increases viral and bacterial intake, rebreathing exhalations, moisture retention in mask mesh. Basically, you have in a cloth mask, you're making a perfect bacterial petri dish for that bacteria to grow and to replicate, and for you to rebreathe it back into your lungs and then back out again into the mesh. It's warm, moist, all that. It's really, I mean, if you're coughing into the mask, that's disgusting. If you're sneezing into the mask, again, disgusting. Like, these things are biohazards when you wear them for a certain amount of time. And to see them just laying around on the ground too is, I mean, these things are disgusting. How it is that anyone can think that they can just wear it for however long they do and they're not gonna, I mean, you're gonna get sick. You're gonna make yourself sick with these things. Anyway. Four, hides image of God. Our faces are our most visible, unique aspect of our physical selves. This equals a denial of self, is what this does. It reinforces feelings of shame and guilt. This is continuous. All the time. You're going to feel shameful. You're going to feel guilty. A lot of people are going to be wondering, why is it I feel like that? Why is it that this? Because you're doing that to yourself. See, it encourages uncleanliness of the area covered and disrespect of teeth, lips, tongue, etc. You're going to end up you know, your body's not going to respond well. Your skin's not going to respond well to being in you know, hidden behind this thing all the time and having this this moist air constantly surrounding it with this bacteria and the virus that's going to be stuck in that mesh and going onto the skin and all that sort of thing. And your skin's not going to respond very well to this. And it's none of this is beneficial at all. The denial of self that comes with this sort of thing is very, very real. And again, this is part of the intent of this whole thing is to reduce and attack the independent nature that we have as people, as individuals, to turn us into that much more herd animals who don't even think of themselves as anything special or important. When you see that, this is it being such an attack on the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, that Bill of Rights is dedicated to the indemnification, the exaltation, of the individual and the importance of individual rights. That's why it's in there. And if you notice what's really being attacked here is all of those individual rights, those God-given rights that we have as individuals. You can see, and what happens too with masks, is that you become a faceless entity. You don't become an individual with it. It's further reducing our value to a mere number, to some number on a statistical database somewhere, as opposed to us being a real, living, breathing human being that has value. Damn it. This is important. And that's one of the things that, again, the masks attack directly. So, speech muzzle. So, literal hindrance to speaking, to being heard, and compounds with other attacks on free speech, censorship, blacklisting, etc. Yeah, so it is the living embodiment of a speech muzzle. If there is no worse thing that you can possibly do to restrict free speech than to force people to wear a muzzle over their mouths. Like, it is the restriction on free speech. Literally. Technically, that is like, I mean, you don't get any worse than that unless literally you're sewing people's mouths shut. It is literally an attack, the number one attack on free speech that there can possibly be. Like, literally, our ability to speak to each other, our actual ability to speak. Not that there's a perceived attack that would come upon us if we spoke about certain things, or that the sorts of things that we say on paper or on a digital platform would not necessarily be propagated in the manner that other things written would. But no, it's literally the number, I mean, this is, it's the literal impediment to speaking is what this thing does. And so, keep this in mind. I mean, what else can you do to actually literally impede one's freedom of speech than to force a muzzle on people's faces and on their mouths? And again, the fact that me saying that just now is, I haven't heard this discussed. I haven't heard this even mentioned in any of the media that I've watched or read or anything. Like, nobody has mentioned that as like a literal free speech thing. Why am I the only one to notice this? And again, the reason I think that that apparently, I mean, I mentioned this when I when I went down to City Hall a while back, this is one of the major points, like, hey, these mask mandates, they are literally illegal based on the First Amendment. They are illegal for that reason alone, besides the fact that, they're just a, it's a, you know, a dictate, a mandate, and it's just someone saying something that they were supposed to follow. It's not a law, but it's a literal speech muzzle. It stops your freely speaking. Why? Because you can't hear as well. People can't hear you as well. You can't give a speech while you're wearing that sort of thing. You can't, it's harder to impart information through speaking while having this thing slapped on your face. And again, why it is, I don't know. It's really bizarre to me that aspect of this has not been more clearly noticed by everyone, and by not only by everyone, but also by those who in the media and are clear, astute observers of the sorts of things that this stuff does to you. And really, it speaks to what I was talking about a few weeks ago in the podcast, being that being that we really need to actually use our eyes and ears to see what's actually going on in the world, because we have been so trained and so brainwashed and so conditioned to living our lives in a sort of a treadmill manner, get up and go, get up and go, get up and go, get up and go, that when there are really actual large scale shifts and changes to our lives, and they are not mentioned by the media or by reporters or whatever else, being that so much of the time we've outsourced our thinking to these other people, it's very easy for people to just be like, oh yeah, well, it's whatever, you know, it's whatever, I didn't even notice. Oh, what's that? Is that supposed to be a thing? No one's even talked about that. Yeah, there's a reason they haven't talked about that, because so many of those people, and you can see this amongst the corporate media, they've been trained to not mention the most important things going on in our lives. They've been trained to mention only especially the most inconsequential aspects of just about everything, just so they can fill the air or create a debate about this, that, or the other, and it being, you know, mostly innocuous and such that they don't step on the toes of any powerful people or institutions or organizations, that sort of thing. So the most consequential things in our lives are the ones that generally, on the media aspect of things and through and for our politicians, are ignored. And that's one of the things noticed in here. And so much of this, I can't blame people for this, because this has been part and parcel to the decades-long indoctrination process that keeps us from actually looking at the world in front of us, actually seeing what's going on, and responding appropriately and realizing what it is that's really being done to us. And this is the epitome of that very thing, is that right there in the First Amendment, Congress shall make no law restricting freedom of speech. And you see what's been done over the last couple of years, where they literally restricted the speech of everyone in the free world through the imposition of these masks. And so many people, not even a second thought came to their mind. I mean, it's really, really quite astounding. Anyway, so that was 5, detail on mask. 6, hides nonverbal expressions, emotional notes, tone, feedback, and conversation, psychologically vital, especially for children, expressions needed for proper negotiations, this is important, challenging to challenging or volatile situations, extremely important for performers, entertainers, teachers, managers, administrators, etc. Really, anyone in front of a group. So if you're given a if you're a comedian, you're on stage. Or if you're a musician and you're on stage, you really have. If you're a speaker, anyone, there's a feedback that necessarily happens between yourself and the audience. In order to know that you are, you know, you're on the same page and, you know, things are going well with them, is that there's these emotional cues that you get from seeing other people's faces. It's pretty vital. And also, mentioning here improper negotiations, because this is something I noticed. This was in March of 2021, is that there was that meeting up there in Alaska with the Chinese that the State Department had, and I noticed that I was kind of watching some of the coverage of this. I noticed that they're all wearing masks and they're sitting at a table and they're all masked up and they're talking to each other. Presumably they're talking to each other. And I thought, well, that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. I mean, it's you can't really know what that other person is thinking on any sort of subtextual level if you can't see their face. If you're having a negotiation with somebody and they're covering their face but you're not, they are at an advantage because they can see your facial expressions and you can, you know, give away, whether you're strong in an aspect of something or you're weak in an aspect of something or you're afraid about something or you're especially courageous about it or whatever else that aren't, expressed in your actual speech or talk, such that this gives an advantage to whoever it is. It's an unfair advantage, clearly, to whoever it is that's covering their face in some sort of, like, say, a business negotiation or a negotiation between countries. And if you're both wearing one, then whoever it is that has more experience in communicating while covering their face is going to have an advantage. So personally, I wouldn't have any sort of international negotiations with any people who would be covering their face. Clearly it shows that there's a criminal intent on their part. That's what this means. They can lie to you with impunity, and they don't even have to learn how to hide that lie with their facial expressions. It's kind of like playing poker, but the person who's playing poker is on a computer somewhere and you can't get a read on him. You can't get a beat on him because you can't see him. It puts that person at an advantage, especially if they can see you. In which case, this is something that's been used against us in the free world who've been pushing back against these, mask issues. And against all this tyranny that's been wrought upon us, is that when we walk around and we're showing our face, like we are, expressing clearly what it is that we think is true and right, and all that. It's a sense of forthrightness that you're showing when people can see you, but when you cover it up. I mean, quite literally, it's a criminal aspect on just about everything that's not only being expressed by wearing that mask, but that also has practical benefit to the person covering themselves up. In a criminal aspect, such that you won't be recognized, and then an aspect of negotiations, where you can hide that person can hide their emotions that much better, and a number of other things too. But at the very least, there's that. Then 7, attack on logic. The rationale behind masks goes against 4th grade biology, middle school physics, and high school psychology, to name but a few. 2 + 2 = 5 is not far behind. Yeah, so there you go. I mean, when you're wearing a surgical mask or a cloth mask or something like that, the air literally goes out. It goes out the sides, or it goes through it. I mean, how big is a virus? The virus is smaller than the pores on that on those masks, whether they're cloth or whether they're whatever. And then they say, oh, well, there's an N95 mask and all this that you can do. Or, I mean, you can have a rebreather and you can put yourself on a World War I mustard gas oxygen mask if you want to. I mean, but people, you know, you're not going to be able to stop this sort of thing coming on you. And it's completely irrational to think that it's going to be helping you in any sort of, you know, large extent. It just doesn't. It just doesn't. It doesn't work to stop aerosolized viruses. It doesn't. I mean, if it somehow does, then we need to immediately adjust our the theory of the viral theory of a disease propagation, or at least aerial viral theory of aerially spread. Viral propagation. And so, it goes against the psychology, because that psychology is what it gets ruined here. Our brains are literally putting this upon people in our society. It shrinks your brain. It makes you dumber. Like, you are becoming a dumber person every day you wear that thing for extended periods of time. And especially if everyone else is doing it, you're becoming a dumber person. I mean, you're it's everything gets reduced and made worse. And the people who, you know, can wear that sort of stuff, and at least for temporary purposes, they're criminals. That's who benefits from that. And there's more behind this too, but. Yeah, it's an attack on logic, because it goes against the biology, the size of viruses. It goes against physics, the fact that air is still, nonetheless, regardless of what you do, you're still breathing the air. You're breathing it in, you're breathing it out. So you're passing along your air into the air that other people are breathing. You can't avoid that. You cannot avoid that unless you're, like, breathing oxygen containers or you have scuba gear on. Yeah. 8, constant messaging. Constant reminder that the virus, quote-unquote, is still here. Inputs perpetual fear, makes hypochondriacs of everyone, despite lack of evidence to justify. So it's a constant message that the virus is there, to be afraid. Be afraid, be afraid. The virus is here, you know. And it's irrational, of course, clearly. Constant irrational messaging, and so long as people are wearing this, they're going to be. It's basically a unspoken, you know, red flash warning that takes over people's minds. Now, you may not think that that's happening, but subconsciously, that is what's happening to everyone who sees somebody wearing a mask in, you know, non-hospital settings. Even in a hospital, too, them doing that. I'd like to recommend folks watch Star Trek Voyage Home again and notice what happens when they go into the hospital with McCoy and Captain Kirk and Spock going to the hospital to get Chekhov later on in that film. Go check it out. you find the interaction interesting. 9, attack on trust. Evolutionary psychology deems clearly a natural distrust of anyone who hides their face, especially nose and mouth. In general, wisdom says that those who encourage people to hide themselves are the ones to distrust. So you look at the evolutionary psychological aspect of this, besides the Judeo-Christian aspects of this, and that says very clearly that it causes a distrust amongst people. Generally, If you can't recognize the person, then they're part of some other tribe. And it, especially if they're covering their face up, I mean, how can on any sort of empathetic, trusting level in an evolutionary biological sense, when we were in tribes of hunter-gatherers, would this have benefited? Would this have people have trusted the people who are covering their faces? It's bonkers to think otherwise. That they're covering their face, so they're perfectly fine, and that's okay. No. So what happens as a result of people covering their faces is that everyone just distrusts each other ever more. And again, this is subliminal. This is subtextual. This is subconscious to where this sort of thing happens. Somebody telling you that, oh no, it's perfectly fine. You can trust people who are covering their face with masks. You can trust them. That only works so far. The depths to our psychology are such that this is going to affect you in this manner, regardless whether you think otherwise, whether you consciously think otherwise. It is going to have that effect. That's the point of evolutionary psychology. That we are nonetheless affected psychologically in deep, deep manners, subconsciously, below what we can affect consciously with our minds, as a result of evolutionary factors and the biology that comes with it, and the fact that people who would just trust whatever tribe would generally get eaten a long time ago. And so these are deep-seated aspects of our psychology that affect us. And no amount of consciously attempting to train us otherwise will do that. It won't change that. So we need to work with these aspects of being at least partly animal amongst nature. Otherwise, they're going to work against us. So this is an attack on trust on that front. 10, potential disaster scenarios. Yeah, the possibilities are endless, and few of them are good. I mean, you look at the possibilities when it comes to what could happen considering our technology these days, and the just one thing that comes to mind is that having people covering themselves up with masks, this is a way that you can easily slide in robots and cyborgs into our society without people even noticing. That's the easy way to do that, because the hardest thing for robots to replicate amongst our bodies is that of proper, speech and facial movement and that sort of thing. So if you really wanted to bring in robots subtly into society, at least some sort of anthropomorphic type of robot that looks like us, like a replicant style things from Blade Runner or Terminator style thing, body snatchers type of deal, this would be the way to do it, because that would be the most difficult thing to replicate amongst at least the outside visible appearance and operation of the human body is what goes on amongst our face, amongst the nose, mouth, that sort of thing. Because what these robots will be doing, if in the event that we have robots that are trying to act like humans, is that they would be they would be talking or using speech coming out of a speaker. They would not be creating speech in the manner that we create it by this, you know, intense ballet of exhaled air and you know, movement of musculature and opening and closing of trachea and the voice box and that sort of thing. So it would be a very, very easy way to identify robots and cyborgs and aliens is through their fake usage, fake speech, and muscle movement of the facial muscles. So that's just one potential disaster scenario that this sort of thing allows. And we are going into quite the brave new world. So these are things to keep in mind in that in order for us to make sure that we don't get, let's say, we don't get slowly replaced by robots, is that we make sure not to be wearing these masks. Anyway, 11. The 11th point on detail on masks, Twilight Zone nightmare, because that's what it is. That's the and that's the those are the details on masks here, and we'll get into the rest of it and continue on here in a minute after we take a short break. Don't go away.